Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. And this is kind of an unusual one. This is a pretty amazing instrument. I've been listening to this in the last few days, going through some clips of Kai's music. And Gary Rudenko had, and I want to thank him for making this show possible and introducing me to Kai. He had called me up and said, you got to have this guy on. You have to check this out. This 15-string, he called it a 15-string bass, but it's way more than that. It does, it's just amazing. What I'm going to do is, I want to welcome Kai Kurosawa to the show. Kai, it's great to have you on the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
And we're going to talk about his instrument. He calls it in Japanese, it's Kubo, which means the aircraft carrier, and it kind of looks like an aircraft carrier. Anyway, it's a 15-string instrument. I wouldn't classify it as a bass because it does more than that. And I'm going to... I'll go through that in a little bit, but I'm going to play a clip to kind of show you what it can do. I'm wondering, should I play one of the ones like Waterline, or should I go right into the one with the synth solo that time?
You know what? I think Waterline would be great because I think that one shows the most how ensemble this instrument can be with the drummer. So, yeah, definitely.
Okay, Waterline. So this is you and a drummer.
Yes, no overdubs.
There's no overdubs. Completely and there's live. No other instruments. So this is Waterline. Take a listen and we'll talk a little more what he's doing.
Thank you.
Now, that's just a small part of the actual clip. The song is much more involved. But you can see all those parts. It sounds like two or three guys playing besides the drums. And it's all this instrument, and he's doing this all live by himself, which is incredible. So let's talk a little bit about your background and how this came to be.
Yeah.
Because it's an interesting story, because you play many instruments. He has a master's in music. So
yes, I'm trained.
he knows what he's doing. So, but anyway, go ahead and give us a little bit of your background.
Okay. Well, I started actually out on piano, and there were many things that my mom had me do when I'm mm-hmm. growing up, and some of them I didn't enjoy, but I definitely do recommend piano, actually, because I really feel like that's a very good background to have. Mm-hmm. And so I tried that. I quit when I was 12. I like piano. I just didn't like playing it. So I started playing bass when I was 15. And between 12 and 15, I tried my hand at trumpet, trombone, guitar. Mm-hmm. Didn't really stick with those, but one day I tried playing bass, and I don't know, I just really enjoyed it. So I actually started out playing bass parts on the lower four strings of a guitar, mm-hmm. and for some reason I really liked that. So from there on, I got a real bass. I got an Aria Pro 2 first.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, and then like actually half a year later, I bought my first six string bass after mm-hmm. like just playing bass for 6 months, and then yeah, just went from there. And then I was playing a lot of solo bass stuff just on four strings, using a lot of harmonics, chords, all that kind of stuff. And then I think that came from just not having a lot of people to play with, and also having like a piano background. I was just really kind of interested in playing a lot of everything.
Well, what were your influences musically?
Musically, well,
what'd you listen to back then?
I listened to a lot of classical music, and I was very lucky. My dad actually, of course, my mom and dad were great, but my dad took me to a lot of classical concerts, and that was good for two things, because one, it meant that I got to really listen to some really good orchestral music, some chamber music, and also that meant that I didn't have to be studying at the time, you know, so it was like a win-win for me. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool, but because there's a lot of counterpoint in what you're doing, and a lot of cross rhythms.
Yes.
So, you got a six string bass, so let's continue to the evolution of this thing.
Okay, so I got my first war guitar. That's a 12 string instrument. I got that 2000, I believe, and I started playing that, and it was basically six strings bass, six strings guitar ish, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I was playing it with bass with my left hand and guitar with my right hand. And I wasn't really using it fully. I just realized, like, after maybe using that for like a month, that I basically had like two parts that was dirty on the fretboard, and I knew that I wasn't playing the instrument. And that's where I went, okay, I gotta really relearn everything. If I want to play this instrument, I can't approach it as just the bass. I have to relearn it. That's when I actually switched to, you might have noticed, I actually play bass with my right hand and my lead with my left hand. I am right-handed, but that's when I decided, okay, if I'm going to really make full use of this instrument, I got to like make like my brain just completely unique to it. So I switched to basically, you know, if you're thinking about a piano, you know, it's like, you know, the opposite of what you do with a piano. So yeah, I switched, and then from there on, I was really into a lot of difficult things, you know, and that's good at some point, you know. So mm-hmm. me and my friend Libor Hadrava, we did a lot of like crazy polyrhythmic practices, like all the time, like to the point where tunes we would write would basically not be much musical, but they were just like some of the most difficult things I did. And so from my understanding of polyrhythm, and we'll do things like, you know, like we'll be like, you know, in four against five, not too difficult, right? But then we'll actually count that five as a three and play like a four against that three, that kind of stuff. So it was just not your typical, you know, stuff. And that's how I really started getting into hearing different layers, and that's when I really started understanding hearing different parts and having to hear different parts if you want to present it as that, you know.
Yeah,
sometimes you could just say like it's polyrhythm, and it's really not. It's just like,
you know. Well, when you hear some of the stuff that he plays, he does go against, like they play against each other. There's a lot of juxtaposition about it, and counterpoint, where they're actually, or counter rhythm.
Yeah.
And that's not easy to do, one guy to do. I mean, I can see it. For me, I can visualize it and play it overdubbing.
Right.
Where I'm in 5-4 or I'm in 3-4, and, you know, play it. But to try to do that simultaneously, that kind of boggles my mind.
Right. You know, I think that came from also, I was really into electronic music. I still am. I actually don't really listen to music these days, just for pleasure. If I'm going to listen, I would really sit down. But for a while, I was doing a lot of more programming and stuff. And so when I did program, I listen and program and think of things a lot in layers. And I think that also helped me as a player understanding what I'm listening when I'm playing it, because I think that's like the most important part. Like, my goal is to be the best audience while being the best player I can be. And I think that really helps with all the layers and all the different like counter rhythms and counterpoints or whatever they are.
When did you get into the point where you were tapping as opposed to plucking like a regular bit? When you had that war guitar, did you play it like a standard?
Oh, no, I was playing it pretty close to where I am, except that instrument, it was a 12-string, and I was playing more like this, like really close to my body, which actually part of the reason why the tuning pegs are facing this way on this instrument. I actually waited for this instrument, and I changed how I play quite a bit during them. But anyway, so I was playing like this, and I would like look down on my fingerboard, and I would basically like, you know, play just this way, like tapping, like upright. And but I was really into tapping when I was playing bass as well. So it wasn't like completely new to me. Yeah, I was tapping quite a bit, and I had like this whole arrangement of Birdland I did, you know, like I'm sure like everybody else has like an arrangement of Birdland they did solo. So I have one of those, and yeah, I was playing like, you know, pop gigs, maybe with just like a piano and a drummer, but then I would also throw in some tapping, or I was actually really good doing harmonics. I still am. So I've done sessions where I just go and I will just play harmonics, and there will be like two other bass players actually. Like, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was like really good at like sort of not the most popular technique, like just, you know, harmonics tapping. I was pretty good at all that kind of thing.
So what made you decide on the development of this, where you actually approached the Tobias brothers to make this? How did you get to this design?
Well, so this one, so I actually never really asked Michael. That sounds kind of funny. It was at the amp shop. I walk in one day because I had some work done by Tina at the amp shop on my previous instrument called the Bear Tracks. And I was picking that up, I think I was picking that up. And I walk in, and I obviously know that Michael Tobias was there, because, you know, I just knew. I saw him in, you know, magazines or whatever. So I saw him there. And I wasn't about to go say hi. I'm just going to do my business and go. And then Artie, who worked at the amp shop at the time, says, "Hey, Michael, come and meet this guy." So Michael Tobias walks over to me. So I played for him unplugged, like, because that one you can hear unplugged, you know. And so
this was the 6 and 6.
Yes, this was a 6 and 6 instrument. And then so he said, "Well, wow, that's really great," and he was really nice. And Michael was, and then Artie was like, "Hey, you should make something for him," you know. So like some other people started feeding him the idea, and then a few years after that, we were at Bass Player Live, and that's when Michael said he'll build me one, and I went, "Oh really? Well, okay, thank you. Yes, please build me one." That was like maybe the first time. I don't know. I had never really thought that somebody like Michael Tobias would be really interested in building me one. You know, that's just kind of my personality, I guess. So, but I was just so lucky. And yeah, and I basically told him like the string setup I wanted, and some of the things, like, you know, I want the control knobs here, that kind of thing. I want it to be hollow, you know, that kind of stuff. But other than that, it's a lot of it is him, basically.
Well, tell us a little bit. First of all, the 6 and 6, how was that tuned? Just like a guitar and a 16 bass?
So the 6 and 6, it was basically a tune from a low B to a high C on the bass side. And I did think of that as 4+2, sort of. But that was wishful thinking. And then the 6-string guitar-ish side was tuned from a C sharp to up to a D. It's still the same with this Kubo as well. So it's C sharp, F sharp, B, A, D, all in fours. No thirds, you know, because, you know, we bass players.
Okay,
you know,
so that's C sharp, F sharp.
Yeah, B, E, A, D.
B,
so,
E, A, D.
Yeah, basically, you know, the same range as you would have on a regular guitar, but just in fourths.
Oh, okay, all fourths.
Yes. Yeah, all fourths.
Okay, so that, okay. Now, so how did you come about to getting this configuration where you have the 6 plus 5 plus 4? So I'm curious how you got to that point.
Well, so when I was playing 6 plus 6, I was thinking of more like 6-string guitar, 4-string bass, 2-string guitar. Although that was wishful thinking. That was kind of my concept, but it didn't work out as good. So I was thinking, okay, you know what? I would like to have a little more strings on my right-hand side, meaning my bass and the chord hand. And I was even thinking a little bit about having another string added to the 6-string guitar side, but then I was like, you know what? That's probably all right. I'm pretty happy with just 6 strings on my left hand. So with my right, I wanted to definitely fill out and be able to play like a full 4-note chord with one hand. That's why I added 2 more strings to the top, two on this side, and that's why I have 4 strings now. And then with the bass, I was happy with having the range I did, except I wanted a little lower, plus I wanted to be able to play low notes pretty up high. And then on this instrument, you know, like if I play a note up here, it's going to be, you know, like a G, like a pretty low G, like you would have to play that like down here.
Oh, usually, wow.
You know, so you can get like really low notes up here. So if I'm playing, you know, even with that waterline, a lot of parts where I'm playing, where I'm soloing and playing chords up here, and then, but I can actually play like the G as well. And I could, you know, play that over here with like a higher voicing with the C, or I can play that with over here with like a little lower voicing with the mm-hmm. C, that kind of thing. So it really works out for me in terms of getting a little more range, and plus I can play, you know, that kind of stuff over as well. And so I got the option to play, yeah, different voicings, different parts, and it works. Yeah, the tone works really nicely, especially because of some of the technique, but we can get into that later. But.
Now, let's go through the tuning. So we know that the top 6 strings here are C sharp, F sharp, B, E, A, D, and fourths. So what's the lower 4?
So the lower 4, this is a G, C, F, B flat. That's in fourths as well, yes. So we got... So the G and the C, that's the equivalent of a bass, you know, with the G on a bass and then a 6-string C or a 7-string F and a B flat. And so the
G is from the top?
From here, yeah. So it's basically...
Going out.
Yeah, so it's basically a left-hand bass or a left-hand guitar, just flipped sort of the other way. And then the tuning on this instrument goes bass from a low F-sharp to a D, F-sharp, B, A, D.
F-sharp, B, A, D.
F-sharp, B, E, A, D.
F-sharp, B, E.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, you got your regular regular 4-string E right here, and then you got your B, and then you got your F-sharp, actually. And
wow, that's way lower than
yeah,
the bass.
Yeah, and notice, actually, even with the fret wrap, with the groove gear fret wrap on, I have the option of actually even still using the open string, which is nice. If I really wanted to dampen, I would just, like, move it maybe up here, and that'll kill a lot more of the open tones. But this really just helps with the muting, of course, but it doesn't completely kill it, which is one thing I really enjoy as well, because I am actually muting quite a bit with my fingers. I know it's, like, hard to tell sometimes, but mm-hmm. it's a very bass player thing. You know, we like to mute our notes. So that's what I'm doing, yeah.
So how many frets do you have on the 4 and the 6 string?
We have 24 frets for this instrument, yeah. 24 frets, and then the middle is fretless. The bass is fretless. And by the way, I have a few side dots, nothing too crazy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's just the side dots. I'm not... When they're the amount of side dots that I usually have on instruments, those kind of drive me a little crazy. So I wanted just like a few. That's enough for me. And for the most part, I'm actually, when I'm playing, I'm not really looking at my fingers. I'm just kind of like looking at the side dot plus the back of the neck.
All right. Now, hold the bass up a little bit.
Okay.
And let's talk a little bit about the woods use. So what's the fretboard?
So the fretboard is Rose of the Mountain. So that is, I believe... I could be wrong, but I feel like Michael is the only one that uses that material. And then the fret job, actually, Daniel did that. And so that's Rose of the Mountain. The body is made of Tasmanian blackwood, which is, like, you know, related to, like, koa or acacia, I believe. And it is hollow. The top is about as thick as my what is that, like the first finger. Part of my pinky.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is hollow. So it's quite, it's hollow.
There's little holes in it too.
Yeah, and it's yeah, and it's completely hollow. Yeah, so that's Tasmanian buckwheat.
And then that's a maple neck?
Yes, it's a maple Fog and purple water. Heart. Yeah, so you can see that up on the head over here. So it's maple and
go
purple heart.
Go ahead and
heart.
Flip it around if you can.
Yeah, let me try. Here we go.
It's how heavy is it? It's pretty heavy?
Yeah, it's heavy enough.
So it's maple and what's that other wood?
Purple heart.
Purple heart?
Yeah. So, yeah. And yeah, so the woods and stuff, I never really picked it. When Michael originally asked me, I said, you know, one of the things that I really like is playing just like, I had instruments with ebony fingerboard and I really like that. And so that was like one of the only things that I told him. But he said, you know what, I think Rose of the Mountain would be good for this. And I said, okay. And he said, well, I like to go with Tasmanian Blackwood. I said, okay, sounds good to me. It's a maple purple heart. Okay, you know.
So is the Rose of the Mountain is more like it's a harder wood, like a...
I believe so, yeah.
So and it's more like ebony?
Right, and it feels right to me, like in terms of the texture of the feeling. You know, that's, I think, one of the biggest things for me mm-hmm. personally. Like, if I ever look at a bass, like, often I won't, you know, like a lot of people would like to play it. But for me, I'll just, like, touch it, and if the wood doesn't feel right to me, I don't even try.
So this is all one big piece.
Yes.
It's not three.
Yes, it is.
And then the Tasmanian Blackwood,
yeah.
What characteristic is that? Is that more like a ash, or is that more like a...
You know what? That's a very good question, and I don't think I have a very good answer for that. So maybe next time.
Okay. Now, I'm yeah. curious what the... why he picked those woods. There's a reason, because he sonically,
right,
even though it's electronic, that body resonates.
Oh yeah, I mean it definitely resonates like crazy. Like I have sort of this like natural Evo kind of sound, which I use quite a bit as well, actually. And that's just, you know, holding down and you know, it's just really yeah, really resonant, actually.
Now, hold it up again. I know I'm putting yeah. you through a workout
no,
here.
It's okay.
Because I want to show them the electronics.
Oh,
the
sure.
So what's going on here?
So the pickups we have... So we have... So this instrument has four outputs. Mm-hmm. And so each pickup... I hope you can see that. Can they see that? Custom NDC pickups. I've been with Nordstrand since 2009 or so. Yes. And so you, there's pull pieces in here, basically. And there, each pickup gets its own output. And the positioning of the pickup, that also I just kind of left to Michael.
Right.
And then,
and it's obviously based on getting the three different instruments.
Right. And then...
And those are humbuckers, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And then we have a GK divided pickup right up here. So that... Or right down here. And that is actually... for the sound modeling. Like... I don't use synth, so just so everybody knows. I know like some of the sounds I use are synthy, but I just use sound modeling, so no latency, none of that. Just the Roland VV99 right now, which I didn't bring today because I have to get that fixed a little bit, but you know, that'll
okay.
happen.
And then what are these guys?
So this is to switch the banks, the sound of the VV99 when I'm playing. So since I'm using that with my six string over here, mm-hmm. so let's say I'm soloing, right? Mm-hmm. I'm playing... And if I want to switch, I can actually just go down like here. So that's how I'm actually switching sounds when I'm playing. So that's why it's over here.
So you have a MIDI out that comes out of this to control the
VB? Yes, there's a 13-pin. Yeah, there's a 13-pin, and that'll model it. And the reason why the volume knobs are over here is, like, if they're here, like a conventional bass, then they're just too far from me. I can't really use them. So here they're just easy for me to access when I'm playing.
And so you have three pickups and one hex pickup, correct?
Yes.
Which is the yes. synthesizer
yes.
pickup, the GK.
Yes.
So that's the four. So yes. you have three outputs on top.
So this is just all volume. So this instrument is passive, actually. So this is just volume knob, and I have two switches right here. And this is just to make the instrument completely mono, meaning if I switch these, these just go all through just one output. So I can just use mm-hmm. one amp. So that's very useful for the trade shows, plus like solo gigs. And when I play solo, I just like to play with one amp versus my other
Well,
setup.
When you said, you were telling me when we talked on the phone that when you play live with like a drummer, you go four amps?
Yes.
So how is that configured?
So I get one guitar amp, basically, for my six string over here, and I get another guitar amp or a bass amp for the BV, for the Roland sound modeling. So that's two, and then bass gets its own amp, and then the four strings over here gets its own amp. So that's the
four
amps.
What do you usually use?
I just use whatever is at the house. We just make it work.
Oh, they have four amps there.
Yeah, if there's not four amps, I can go with three.
But you don't bring any of your own.
No, not okay. Especially not when I'm traveling. You know, I have to travel and carry all the stuff usually myself. But three amps does get the message across. But yeah, two is.
Well, when you use three, what's the difference? What do you gang together? Just the.
So I'll put the VB and the six string. So basically the two, on the same side. But it definitely is. And it's actually surprisingly easier for me and the drummer to play when we have four amps, because especially the drummer, he's like, I can actually really hear what you're playing, because mm-hmm. We've done shows where it was, you know, we just had to go through one amp or a PA, and that's fine too, but, you know, it makes it harder for him to hear, and it kind of actually makes it hard for me to play as well.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what you brought here on the pedals that you use.
Yeah. So this is the stuff that I use when I play with the drummer. So over here, if you want to start from the beginning, we have the Amperaw amp shot.
I'm showing it to you upside down.
Yeah.
This is new. This is a prototype.
Oh, this is not even out. Yeah.
Yeah. We had talked about Gary. This is made at the amp shop, Gary Rudenko. But it's brand. I mean, you can't even get it. He's like, he took my prototype.
Yeah. And I'm happy to take it. So this is basically, I have the, so this is two type of overdrives basically. So that's just without it, that's with it, you know, just giving a little boost, I guess. And then for soloing on different tunes, like on Waterline and stuff, I later on kick on the higher gain, but so you can do that. So now I have one side that's more distorted, and then this side there is no distortion. So
give a little example.
Yeah, anyway, so that's it.
And try it with just the mild distortion so you get an idea what that sound is. Gives it a little bit of a edge to it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really nice to have that, especially when playing with a drummer, you know.
It cuts.
Just a little bit really makes a big difference. And then I have a DD20, so that is a Boss. And I've had this for a while.
Upside down again, sorry.
Upside down again. So, and this one, I've been using this for years. But, you know, you basically have your regular delay and stuff. And I got a longer delay. One thing I do like about this one is you can actually, press it, and it'll basically, I can use it more like a piano pedal. So I can, you know, so I'll use it that way. And I have a tap tempo here, actually, so I can get it, you know, a lot shorter and stuff. So I'll do that kind of thing.
So you loop with a tap tempo to get like.
Pretty much. Like, it's more like. It's not. Sometimes I think of it as looping, but most times I think of it more like a piano pedal, where they, you know, hit a note.
Oh, so you use this more like a piano pedal?
Yeah, basically. And then you know, I have a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a reverse. But I'm not a big fan of like short reverse. So often I'll just like do the tap tempo for that as well. And I'll, you know, I'll basically be counting like the full four bars. I'm not gonna go that long right now. And then. Kind of thing. So I'll basically use it for more stuff. Yeah, I think that's a lot. I like that a lot better. And then I have a just a reverb, Immerse, New Neighbor. Love the stuff.
Very good. Good stuff.
Yeah, they're wonderful. And
you can see that.
Yeah, so that's the six string side, at least what I have today.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, I didn't bring the VB99 because I got to get some work done on it. A little
noise.
And
that goes through the six from the hex.
Exactly. And then, so this, I have an Inspire that's a chorus pedal. And that's on my four string. So this is with the Inspire, and this is without. And you can hear that if it's off, let's say, so that's with off, you can kind of still hear that it's two parts, but it's kind of easier lost, especially on playing another part. So if you could turn that on.
Yeah, you hear the other parts.
Right, like it comes out a lot better. So that's why I like that. And so that's the only thing that the four string is going through. And then we have a Nordstrand Starlifter bass preamp. And that's, that's really cool as well.
This is nice.
Yeah, and by the way, it's like magic. You turn it off and the color changes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty neat, huh? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The I don't know if you can see it. The edge is red right now.
Yeah, so that's muted.
On mute, and it goes green.
Yeah.
And it lights up.
Exactly.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. And this thing is amazing.
I mean, it's the little things.
Yeah.
It's the little things.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Carrie Nordstrand was really proud of it. To the point, I think one time he even told me that he was trying to figure out how to make the lights go on, even if it's not plugged in. Priorities, right?
Solar power.
Right.
There you go.
But this preamp, I mean, if I play solo, like, basically, I really only just need the preamp. Because somehow this really balances out all the 15 strings. Plus, it still sounds like it's coming, you know, you can hear all the 15 strings really well. And so that was a very good surprise.
So I assume this is a very clean circuit.
Yes.
It doesn't dirty up.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of headroom, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can hear, well, this is off course because the bass is already great, but so you can hear
it
that
gets
there.
Down there.
Yeah, it gets down there, but it's still got like a, you know, you can hear that there's still a pitch and not just like something else.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah.
So, and then what's this guy for, the MX6?
So that is just a passive mixer that I carry around just in case I have to go through one amp or one output. And that's just always just handy to have because, you know, you never know if you're going to get, you know, how many amps. Of course, mm-hmm. like, you're never going to get 4 amps all the time. So that's just something I carry around with me. And then that basically just mixes all my signal. And so that way I can have at least some control of how it's going to sound.
So the three outputs go into here before it goes into the Starlifter.
Right now it is, yes.
Right, okay.
If I have 4 amps, then, you know, obviously the mixer is not going to be in play at all.
Right. Now I have everything going into this G-plex, my G-plex here, but I'm bypassing all of the preamp part. It's just running line in so that he can use his high impedance out, which allows him to use the controls on here. There's a DI out, but it bypasses everything, so that's why we're going through here. But actually this could actually go right into the board.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm using the DI out on my G-plex in there, so I just bypass that, so it's clean going into the plex isn't adding any tone to it. So that's a pretty amazing setup. And this is your basic live setup.
This is, very basic live setup. If I'm in LA, obviously I would like to take a little more because I do.
What else would you use?
I would probably take, I do have a, the name is escaping me, a Source Audio with the filter one where I can use the hot hand where you can, you know, put that little ring on your hand and you can control the filter like that. I really like using that. I actually have a Miku Stomp. I don't know if you know what that is.
Mm-mm.
It's like a Vocaloid pedal.
Oh.
So it triggers really terribly and everything, just being honest. And you can't play a chord. It's just, but when I like using it just because it adds like some really fun sounds to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually just have that on a separate separate output, actually. So it doesn't really affect my chain. But so I do a lot of Palorel, actually. I don't go, you know, even today, like if I'm in LA, if I have like a separate chorus, then I'll just have like that go to a separate channel or something. So it's not going to feed into one to the other, actually.
Right. So you, so you use more, well, how do you program the VB, nine, is it?
VB99? Yeah.
That the UB99 or VB?
VB, yeah. You can do that just in the unit, so it's...
So what kind of sounds are you using that
for? I can get, like, a synth lead sound. I can get more, like, filtered sound. Maybe we can play some of that later as well. I could get more, like, what they call, like, a fretless sound, but it's more, like, just a slow, you know, like a slow, like a volume pedal kind of an effect on it. You can get more of a... like an acoustic bass sound, like with a little more body. It's kind of like, you know, with the Boss acoustic simulator where you can add more body kind of thing. You can get like, you know, more classic synth sounds, and that's all from sound modeling as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, listen, let's play. Well, since you're talking about the VB99, this one has a synth solo. That time, I think, would be appropriate.
Sure.
Let me play this clip, and you can hear a little more what he's doing with the VB99s on there. I don't remember off the top of my head. Are you using the chorus on the four string?
No, I'm actually on the four string. I'm using the Seraphim, except that's just in like a regular reverb mode. That's another new neighbor pedal.
Okay, so let's take a listen to this one, and this is called That Time.
Should we start from the middle, or is it? Do you want to just start from the top?
I pulled a clip, so I pulled a clip, so it kind of gives a, because the songs are like about 5 or 6 minutes, so I had to pull like a. Actually, I was trying to get them down to 1.5 minutes, but I had to go like 2 to get the full development.
Okay.
So take a listen, and you can tell me what's going on. It's interesting because he's just tearing up here on the six string part, and he's walking that, and like, you know, he starts doing the boom, 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 the 1.5, but it's still, that's not easy to do. I mean, my mind still, I can pick out each one, but to do both of them at the same time, that's pretty amazing.
Well, thank you.
Now, is that the four channel setup?
Yes, that is the four channel setup, and at the beginning of the clip, you can. It's kind of maybe hard to hear it's kind of hard to identify, but if you go back and listen, I actually turned down my regular six string sound and I'm just going with the BB99 at the beginning of the solo. And later on, I actually turned this back up as I'm soloing. And that way I start adding in my more distorted regular guitar sound back into it. And then when my solo is ending, I actually cut out the BB99. So now I just get like the six string sound.
Right. But wait a minute. You're, when I was listening, there's no break in one of the instruments. These two guys are going all the time. When do you have time to hit that knob?
Oh, well, because with this show, I actually had a volume pedal, so that was a lot easier. And then this one, when I'm basically just kind of chilling with one hand, playing the bass and the chords, I would just like reach over right over here and just turn it off and then come back and then turn it off.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
Because I'm trying to remember where there was chords without this guy playing.
Yeah. It's kinda hard to picture if you're not there actually.
Often
I try to recommend people to check out my YouTube and stuff just because like that's a lot easier to visually not make sense, but I think it helps, you know.
So, yeah. No. Okay, let me play I'm going to play El Fuego,
okay,
which shows the shimmer sound.
Yes.
And so he improvs over this like shimmer pad. And then you can show us a little bit of how you broke, how the parts are on it after. But let me go ahead and play that. Let me grab this. This is El Fuego. Check this out. This is pretty cool. Now, what I had pulled out of there was the at the first part of it when he's doing the little thing. There's the shimmer behind there, and one of the things I wanted to show was that solo, which was pretty amazing.
Okay. You're
doing, because the bass is pretty busy, and you're doing it. So tell us a little bit, or show us a little bit what you're doing there.
Oh, you mean really, in terms of like the soloing part?
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So let's see. Obviously, different sound, but. So we got.
Now you're using the VB99 for that solo, but it's kind of like that. Maybe the.
Yeah, the so that one I had a mix of having a distortion and like a sound from the VB. Yeah, so basically, a lot of the times, what's happening is, so I'll be playing bass, obviously with one hand in the chord. So I do know my shapes, so I can go through them pretty easily. A lot of the times I'm actually playing the chords a lot with my thumb as well.
Mm-hmm.
So my right hand thumb is actually on the fretboard quite a bit. So I could actually just switch the voicing easier this way. Or I can get different voicings, like, you know, that's like a major 7. You can get like your minor 7.
Trying to get the thumb on there. There you go.
Okay. So yeah, you can get.
So
like
he's chording like the two or three strings at a time with the thumb.
Exactly. So you can get like a. You know, a seventh, I mean, like a ninth kind of sound. You can, let's say if I'm playing like this. Right, that's pretty in. But I can actually move this hand up. You know, and that actually helps. I can do that where I'm actually doing, and then I'm plucking. It's kind of a, yeah. So that what's happening is basically, yeah, some chords and mostly lead line in my left hand. And then, yeah, so bass and chords in one hand. And that's been actually working out a lot better, especially from this past tour.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like, I mean, you could hear some of it in like the clips from like El Fuego in that time, but especially like the full version of like Waterline or some of the more recent stuff. Like that separation of having like two parts in one hand really is starting to come out a lot better, actually. But so yeah, that's kind of what's going on. And I'm thinking, so the El Fuego solo part is like not in 4/4. It's, you know, it's like in different signatures. But me and my drummer are pretty comfortable just not playing like every bar, but, you know, kind of thinking in bigger pictures. So that helps as well. Yeah. So
it sounds like you're changing meter a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. In that one,
especially in that song.
Yeah. Exactly. That one. I just kind of wanted to go just have at it. You know, with like the newer stuff. Some of the newer stuff. We don't have as much time to rehearse,
mm-hmm.
so a lot of the new stuff I intentionally did write in 4/4, but a lot of the stuff we play is in odd time, and that's like one of the things that I'm actually pretty good at. So,
we're almost out of time. I told you this would go by fast.
I know, this is so quick.
So these are some of the recent things that he's done. He's got a lot of stuff out here.
Yes.
This is the latest one, Time's Covered.
Yes, that's a solo album. Yeah.
And that's just, is that with the section or is that just you solo on it?
That's just me on Kubo. Most of the tune is solo. There's one tune that I did overdub, but I think that one's pretty pretty obvious. But yeah, it's basically just me on Kubo, and you can find that on Bandcamp as well if you're interested. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of my stuff you can find on Bandcamp, actually.
And then this is where a lot of the clips I was playing some of it, though you heard some stuff that's not released yet.
Yes.
Here's the... Got Monk 2.0 live at the Jack Lion.
Yes, exactly.
And then he also has here
like DVDs,
Got Monk 2.0 DVD.
Yeah.
So you can see everything that he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some interesting people on here, too. Let's see. You have Reika Tori.
Yeah. She's the soprano. Yeah.
Satoru Tsuji.
Tsuji, yeah.
On Chapman Stick.
Yeah.
And then...
Kegoi is my drummer.
On drums. So you can actually see that. And then here's another one live at Curved Line Space.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of live stuff.
Yeah.
And this one has sitar, Go Kurosawa, your brother.
Yeah.
And trumpet, Daniel Rosenboom.
Yes.
On trumpet. So pretty interesting stuff. Give your website and how people can learn more about you.
Well, my website is happysad.org.
That's interesting.
I know that came. I got that from a girl in college, you know, so just kind of stuck with me. So,
how did you get the .org? That's usually
the .org. I just got.
You don't look nonprofit,
right? No, I just thought it was cool to have .org.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
I actually when I was in college, I would also make websites just for pocket money. So I was kind of like, you know, .org sounds cool. Let's just go with that.
Go with it. That's cool.
Socials, Kai Kurosawa, KaiKurosawa. Like my YouTube, Instagram, if you search for Kai Kurosawa, I think it's pretty easy to find me. I'm the regular sized Japanese guy with the enormous aircraft carrier.
Aircraft carrier. So Kubo is Japanese for aircraft carrier, yes. Just so you know. And... okay, well, listen, thank you so much for being on. We'll definitely have you back on again.
Oh, I'd love to come.
I have to hear this with the VB90, the VB99.
Yeah, and can I mention one thing before
sure,
I go?
Sure.
I would like to extend my thank you to Michael and Daniel who built this
definitely.
For me. Absolutely amazing, but I also just want to make a quick mention of Mr. Emmett Chapman, who invented the Chapman Stick, and I know him personally. He's been nothing but kind and understanding to me. I even played at his 50th anniversary of his free hands method, and so you know, just obviously,
what does he think of this instrument?
He's very impressed with what I do with it, and he's been nothing but kind and understanding to me, and I think you know, he understands that his idea has like gone out there and in a way has had like, you know, their own children and stuff, and I'm basically. I've actually never owned a Chapman Stick, and that was kind of hard to tell him, but I did. And so he knows that as well, but he understands, I think, that what he gave the world has kind of taken a life of its own, you know. And, yeah, he's been very complimentary about what I do and this instrument. So.
Well, I think it's a good example of what you have, what you want to do musically, building the instrument to accommodate that. Because obviously everything that's in this design is for specific things and very specific things.
Yes.
The four string, I mean, the six string with the open, with the all fourths is obviously an interesting tuning in itself. The five string bass section, but that four string, there's specific needs that you need in your music that achieves.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see an instrument. Develop for the music that you make, which is kind of it's unique in itself.
Well, you can see me and my drummer live because he's going to be in town next year for the NAMM show. So we just booked a gig at the Blue Whale on January 21st, might be 22nd, but 21st,
mm-hmm.
that's a Tuesday. But yeah, we'll be there playing two sets of just duo, us sounding like, you know, a quartet or something.
Are you going to be playing at NAMM in one of the lounges?
Yeah, we'll be at NAMM. He'll be carrying around his djembe, so we can do like an acoustic stuff. So we're actually pretty good at that as well. And yeah, we'll be just be playing at the booths, whatnot. You can catch us at the MTD booth. I'm supposed to also demo at the Backbeat booth, and then hopefully we'll see. I'm trying to sneak into Groove Gear Groove Live, which is by Groove Gear, you know. I really think like when people see us, it's pretty special in terms of like what two people can do as an ensemble, you know. And we never really started that way. It was just something that we just kind of had to do,
yeah,
of a circumstance. And then we thought, oh, you know what, we can really do this. And so it was never like a goal, but now we're just kind of running with it.
Very cool. So what are you going to take us out with?
I'll play a little bit of, yeah, gosh, what am I going to play? Yeah, I'll play a little bit of a Japanese tune or something, actually. Maybe okay. Something that sounds a little Japanese, yeah.
Okay, no, that sounds good. Everybody, we will see you next week. Have a great week, and thank you for listening. And also, too, I just want to briefly mention, I finally got the YouTube set up for All About Guitar. So please feel free to subscribe to it and check out. There's a few of the shows more coming up, and this one will be up soon too. So I appreciate if you guys take a look and subscribe to it. Kai, take us out. Thank you so much. Thank you, Gary Rudenko. Thank you, Doug, for being on the show. And we'll see you next week. Thank you.